If you don't think that you're going to have a chance to listen to every single thing that I say for the next 2 hours, do me a favor. Download the podcast, Kyra Knights with Jake Skorheim. It's free. It's easy to get. You just go into your phone. You pull up your application section. I'm going to do this for you right now. I'm going to go into podcasts. I'm going to go to the search bar at the bottom. There's like five. If you have an iPhone like I do, I'm just assuming most people have iPhones. You might have something else. And if you do, God bless you. But I'm going to describe for iPhone users what to do right now. Really, really quick. So you can download it. Go to let's see here. How do I do this? Oh, here it is. Podcast. All right. Click the podcast icon. Once you're in that application, they call it an app for short, in case you didn't know. Once you're in that app, go down to the bottom. At the very bottom, you have got your home, your browse, your library, and your search. If you hit the search button at the top, it's going to give you a little box. Automatically, it's going to put the cursor there. I just want you to type in Kyro. That's K-I-R-O, Knights. With, and then it's just going to populate it for you. It's right there. There it is, the top, Kyra Knights with Jake Skorheim. You then can select on that. And at the very top, you can hit, what is this here? You can hit subscribe or download, whatever you do. And that's as easy as it is, easy as pie. And then you can listen to every single episode, HD. You can carry me around with you wherever you want. It's like you get to boss me around. If you're into that stuff, you can play, stop, start, pause me, whatever you want. You're the boss. Not in a weird way, but whatever. I mean, just, you know, have fun with it. Explore the space on the podcast. All right. We got a lot of stuff to get to. This is the news roundup. Every single day, we take clips from the previous shows, which are on our air. I don't know if you know, but there are other shows on the air here on Kyra Radio. We got Seattle's Morning News. We got Jay and Ursula. We got Jack and Spike, John and Sherry. And that is all a prelude to the primetime show on Kyra, which is, of course, yours truly, Kyra Knights with Jake Skorheim. So we look back on these other shows, we talk about what they were talking about, and then we can talk about it in real time. I haven't heard any of these clips. Matt pulls all these for me. Good job, Matt. Seattle's Morning News was talking about Seattle public school enrollment. I guess it's really pretty far down, and they discuss why they think that might be.
There's three reasons why, right? So nobody's having kids. Two, we saw during the pandemic, during that time, there were a lot of kids that were isolated with the public schools. They were home. And those that had the means and the ability to be able to go to private school, that's why private schools' waiting lists were off the charts. People were just going, I'm just taking little Joey and Sarah right to the private school.
That's right.
Private school enrollment went off the hook. So those that have the means are like, you know what? We're going to send our kids to private school.
Yeah.
So that's two. And three, a lot of people can't afford to live here anymore. Mm-hmm. So they had to leave. So you have those three things that are the reasons. Now, what stands out to me is they're going to pay $100,000 for a survey. Look here, y'all can send me right now a $25 Starbucks gift card. You know what I mean? A $5 gift certificate to Crumble so I can get one cookie and I can solve your problems and let you know what's going on. I'll tell you why people, there's a $4,000. Oh, by the way, there's going to be more. So what is the fix? They need to fix how they divvy out the money. Like the way they do it, like, oh, so if it's less enrollment, that means to be less money. I mean, look, the model is not there anymore. Kids aren't going to school like they used to. There's certain things as mental health days for young kids out there, which is understandable, mm-hmm. which didn't happen before. So they're starting to judge the budget based on who's at school every day. They need to come up with a different model.
Here's something interesting, too, about why people might not be going to Seattle's public schools as much. During the pandemic, and G was right, he pointed this out, during the pandemic, when they shut all the schools down, and you now had all these kids who were just sitting around at home, twiddling their thumbs, trying to learn remotely, which they have, you know, clearly seen now. They have the stats, they have all the data to back it up, was not successful. I mean, they were trying to do what they could, but it stretched on way too long. Trust me, as a parent, I'm a parent. I have three kids. I'm about to have my fourth. One of my kids during the pandemic was starting kindergarten. He did his entire kindergarten year from home. He never even went in. Think about that. As a parent, you're sitting there going like, oh my gosh, I wish this kid could have the experiences of going into school, meet his classmates in person. They're not just a tiny little box on, you know, like some Brady Bunch opening credit sequence or something on the screen. That's how he knew the kids in his school, was just like in their tiny little box. Isn't that so bizarre to think about? I mean, it seems like some futuristic nightmare, but that's what it was. So during that time, you had a lot of people say, hey, you know what we're going to do? because we don't like that all these schools are being shut down, we're going to start homeschooling. And the number in 2019, the number of homeschoolers in Washington State was around 19,000, maybe 19, 20,000. During the pandemic, that number jumped up to 39,000, almost 40,000 students. A 100% increase in students who went into homeschooling. And a lot of those people realized, because I have friends and family that have homeschooled, a lot of those people realized that it's a pretty great way to get your kids educated. Like, yes, you're not getting all the same benefits that you might if you go to an in-school public school system or even a private school system. But what you can still get is you get a lot of, you know, wonderful time for your kids to learn. You can clear. I'm not a person who thinks that you can't learn homeschooling. Like, I have seen the opposite. These kids are whip smart. I don't homeschool my kids. My wife and I don't homeschool our kids. But we have family members who have. Those kids are geniuses. They're super, super smart kids. The other thing is you're not just like sitting at home all day. You're going out. You're doing all these fun activities. You become the teacher. That's another benefit of being a homeschooler, is the mom or the dad who's homeschooling these kids gets to then take them on all these adventures, and it's part of their education, which is really, really cool. All these experiences that you get to have now with your kids as they're learning and as they're growing and becoming little adults eventually. You're getting to see that happen in real time as you're homeschooling your kids. And this is not just like a homeschooling ad. I'm just telling you what I have seen firsthand. The other cool thing is you're not just homeschooling them at your house. A lot of these people joined homeschool groups. So once a week, you meet up with 10 other families who are also homeschooling. And now these kids are meeting up with 35, 40 other kids. And so it's not feeling like what you would think of as traditional homeschooling, where you're just like, oh, your kids are out on the prairie and they're never seeing anybody. No, that's not what it is at all. That's like an old school way of homeschooling. That's not the case anymore. It's way different. So I think a lot of people also jumped into homeschool, and that's probably one of the reasons that public school attendance is down. All right, G and Ursula, we're talking. Let's see here. Mike Lewis was in for G, and he was talking about with Ursula what still gives him a sense of wonder. I like topics like this.
What still gives
my sister's traveling for it.
A sense of wonder? Like, is there something that you would go to all lengths to be able to experience it?
I guess I don't know what all lengths means, but I would say this, that I mean, would I pay $200,000 for a suborbital, you know, trip on a rocket? No, not by anyone's imagination. Would I travel somewhere to see something cool? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, and this is something I'm sure that most people here have already seen. I have yet to see it. I've been in Seattle 24 years, and the problem is cloud cover, but the aurora borealis.
Yeah.
That, to me, is something I would love to see, and I've been in Alaska a bunch of times, never at a point where I could see that. Would I go somewhere to see it? Well, I don't. You can't always predict it when it's going to happen. Sometimes they have a pretty good idea when it's going to happen, but I'd love to see that. But I'm also like easily blown away by, I do a lot of backpacking. I'm easily blown away by cool things in the natural world. And so for me, the eclipse is just one in a larger sort of scheme of things that I would absolutely make time to see.
Yeah. Not just, you know, what's out there in space, but the other thing that gives me a sense of wonder is oceans. And what is deep under, and how much of it we have no clue as to what is happening.
So about 95% of it.
Exactly.
You know, we don't have much clue, right?
Exactly. And even just how much we have seen, it is an incredible thing to take in.
You know, the question there about what you would do, like what still gives you a sense of wonder, I think it's interesting. They also talked about like what you would pay to go do. What I have arrived at this place in life now because I have kids. I mean, I talk about kids so much, but really, it really defines everything in my life, my family. It's much, much more difficult once you have kids to venture off and go see things in the world, like things that you go like, oh, that's amazing. That would be so cool. There's also, I mean, like the benefits way, 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 way outweigh the negatives. So, you know, the negatives is you can't travel as much and everything's more expensive. The benefits are everything. It's great to have kids. I highly recommend it for anybody who's considering. As long as you have the right person to raise your kids with, it becomes very tricky if you don't like each other. All right. So here's the thing that I wish that I had done this, even though at the time, and even though as I'm about to say it, it sounds ridiculous. But some friends of ours, before we had kids, of my wife and I said, hey, we're going to go to this music festival. And right there, I instantly, like, my eyes started to roll. And then I realized, oh, I don't want to be rude to them. I'm not going to let my eyes roll, but I'll just listen to their question. So they said, we're going to go to this music festival in Iceland, in Reykjavik. Just outside of Reykjavik, there's this Iceland music festival that is underneath the Northern Lights. You're literally inside these hot, you're like standing in these hot springs because Iceland's cold, or it can be at times. You're in these like amazing natural hot springs as these DJs are playing all this music, and you can look up and you can see the Northern Lights. It's apparently like a really, really cool thing. They've been doing it for like 20 some years. And, you know, this is probably in, let's see, we had our first kid in 2015. So this would have been like, you know, 2012, 13. We said no. Even though the cost wasn't insane, like it definitely would have been something affordable. I wish that I had done that. I wish that my wife and I had just said, you know what? Yeah, we'll go for 5 days to Iceland and we'll go to a, you know, I'm not like a DJ person, but yeah, I'll go see a DJ and stand in a hot spring. That now sounds super fun to me, but I didn't take them up on the opportunity. They went, I didn't. They said it was amazing. And now I will just always wish that I had gone. So like finding things like that, that still give you a sense of wonder, requires that you take a leap of faith sometimes, and that you take risks and that you try things. That becomes harder and harder to do as you get older. When you're a kid, it's very easy to achieve a sense of wonder because you haven't seen anything. Kids are like, you know, they haven't seen anything yet. So everything is kind of like a big sense of wonder for them. But as you get older and as you've seen more of the world, it becomes harder and harder to achieve that. So when you get the opportunity, you got to grasp it. Grasp it as fast as you can before it slips away and you have children, which is also great. That's also a sense of wonder, like seeing the world through your kids' eyes. I know that's like a really cliche, silly thing to say. It's also a totally true thing. Sometimes cliche things are very true. Seeing the world through your kids' eyes does give you a renewed sense of wonder about the world. My kids are fascinated by things that I haven't thought twice about in 40 years. And when I see my kids looking like really intently at a bee under a microscope, you're just like, yeah, this is really interesting. I never took the time to look at a bee as closely as my kids are looking at bees. But they're amazing. You should see the eyes on these things, by the way. They're huge. All right, Jack and Spike. Washington is one of the worst states for distracted driving. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but let's see what they had to say about it.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing. That kind of risk is what we're seeing every day on our roads.
And that's, I have a mental breakdown literally every single day because I look outside of my very expensive apartment during rush hour, my floor-to-ceiling windows, and I look down and I see people doing what? Texting and driving.
When I see it on the road, and I'll drive on I-5 and I'll see people on their phone, I will literally honk my horn until they look over at me and I shake my phone in my hand and give them the no, no, no.
And then they go, wave. We don't have a charger.
I guess. Because I can't just abide by, you know, steering clear of that person. I'm trying to make it clear to them. Don't do this. Do not do this.
Right.
We're the most distracted state in the nation, according to AAA.
So,
Washington.
Yeah, it's crazy. So that's why they've started to launch this Don't Drive Distracted campaign, and specifically for teenagers. I mean, it's probably the worst thing that your kid could do behind the wheel of a car, other than be, you know, singing Wham in unison with each other.
Funny you mention that, because Mickey Gomez wrote a nice piece on My Northwest, and kids in the car are as dangerous of a distraction as a phone is to a teenager.
Don't have kids. That's what I always say.
I think a provisional license, when you first get your license, I think for the first 6 months, it's been a while since my kids got their driver's license.
Yeah, they don't let you drive anyone else.
With anyone else in the car.
Yeah.
Because, you know, loud music, talking to your buddies, people goofball. You know how kids are. They goofball in the car. That's as distracting as a phone can.
Kids are goofballs. Goofballs. Kids are goofballs. They should not be driving with other teenagers. When I look back and when I think about all the stupid stuff that my friends and I did in cars, I'm not even going to say it on the air because I don't know if the statute of limitations, how long that stretches out for. Dumb. Kids are dumb in cars. I wish there was a way to raise the driving age to 37 because I think that would make it a lot safer on the roads. Yes, it'd be difficult to get around and it would probably hamper them in their career in some way, but it would be a lot safer. It's not realistic. It's not like a realistic hope, but I don't know, maybe. All right, John and Sherry were talking about a cashier on a Zoom call while you're trying to eat. Let's hear about that.
A New York restaurant replaces local cashier with a woman on a Zoom call from the Philippines. there's any sound of this, but this guy says he goes into this restaurant, goes to order, and there's this lady sitting there, and she's got a, they got like this screen, like the, you know, chroma key screen sitting. She looks pretty depressed, just sitting there, and the guy goes to talk to her, the Zoom call on the thing, and then she places the order, and she's got some, you know, graphics behind her about, like, you know, oh, happy to see you and nice to see you and stuff. Guy's like talking to her, puts the order in, and then at some point, she, I think she leaves the Zoom call. We'll be back shortly, because she doesn't sit there the whole time, then comes back in. The guy's like, here I am having a conversation with a woman in the Philippines, which you get that when you call customer service.
So I misunderstood what they were saying there. I guess what they're actually saying is that when you go into a restaurant now, and some restaurants, or apparently this restaurant, they have outsourced the cashier, so it's just somebody on Zoom. That seems like kind of a lo-fi version of new technology. I don't feel like that's really doing something amazing. I thought, you know, when I saw something the other day that I thought was crazy. They have robots now. They have robots that will come to your table. There are restaurants that are almost fully automated, which is becoming really popular now, because in states like California and Washington State, they're making it really, really expensive for people to do business. Restaurants to do business in those states, they're raising their, like in California, they raised the minimum wage. I think it was like $15 an hour or something. And for everybody who is a fast food employee now in California, as of April 1st, 24 days ago, you have to make $20 an hour. And so what restaurants started doing is they said, all right, well, we'll just start automating things because we can't afford to pay each one of these employees, each one of these minimum wage employees, $20 an hour. So what we'll do instead is that we will start automating this process. Or in the case of like the pizza restaurants, pizza, a bunch of pizza chains, like 1,500 pizza chains in California, they said, well, what we're going to do is like fire all of our non-essential workers, which apparently was just their delivery drivers. They said, we're going to fire all of our delivery drivers because we can just like outsource that to Uber Eats or Instacart, and they can deliver our pizzas for us. And then for our other workers in store, we'll just cut their hours back and we'll do with less employees. So the companies are not going to have to actually lose money. That's not what companies do. They figure out a way around it. Or what you're also seeing in California is, on average, most fast food restaurants in the last 3 weeks have raised their prices 7%. To make up the difference for what they're now having to pay their employees. So this is all part of the automation that we're talking about here. And oh, back to my automation thing. I saw a restaurant that decided to get rid of employees completely, and now they just use robots. So they have food that is prepared offsite. They then take it to the restaurant. It's heated at the restaurant to a point where it becomes, you know, it's edible for the diners. A robot puts it out. A robot literally rolls it out on a tray, delivers it to your table. You're ordering on a little screen at your table. You're never seeing a human individual. You're paying, you know, you're just swiping your card like anybody might on a little kiosk thing at your table. You're never seeing a person when you go into these restaurants. Isn't that bizarre? It's crazy where technology has gotten to. But this one, like, it's just a person in the Philippines on a Zoom call. I don't know if I'd be super comfortable just like handing them my card. If I just, am I supposed to just like read my card to them and give them my card number? I don't know if I like that. All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Next, we're going to talk to Aaron Granillo. He's going to join us to talk about the Mariners. Last time we chatted about the Mariners, they weren't doing so hot. They've changed their tune a little bit. We're going to talk about them when we come back here on Cairo Nights. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I have a very special guest on with me right now. Aaron Granillo is going to talk with us right now about the Mariners. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Always happy to be here and always happy to talk about the Mariners anytime.
You're even wearing a baseball sweatshirt that looks like the Major League Baseball logo, but it's quite clearly Ken Griffey Jr.
You ever seen this before?
With his backwards hat. No, I haven't.
So cool, right?
That is cool. Where'd you get that?
This is like my favorite. Shout out to Simply Seattle. Local company.
Yeah.
They make this.
They put that together.
They put this together. Yeah. It's the old school, like royal blue, yellow colors.
Yeah. No, I love the color combination.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Did they have to get Griffey's permission to do that?
Good question. Don't know the answer.
Because it's clearly his likeness.
Yes.
they may not want us to highlight it now that we're saying.
Well, you know, we gave them credit. We gave them credit. Simply Seattle Sports. You can go to their website.
A friend of mine recently, this is a quick aside, then we'll get into Mariners talk. A friend of mine recently was telling me that he was heading over, I don't know which card store it was, but it was some baseball card shop in Mill Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having, like, for a certain price, you could drop off Griffey cards.
Yeah.
They have a relationship with him. They'll send it out to him and he'll sign them. He was having like a signing event, but he wasn't actually going to be in the store. It was just like you could get your cards to them.
Yep.
I don't know what it was, like a couple $100 probably.
Sure. Can I tell you my Griffey signature story before we actually talk about today's Mariners?
Yeah, heck yeah.
The only time I've ever abused my press pass in my career, I was a young reporter in Arizona in Phoenix, and we had press pass to see the Waste Management Phoenix Open tournament.
That'd be so fun.
Very fun tournament every time. And Griffey was on the celebrity circuit. So the celebrities come out a few days before the actual tourney starts. And I was assigned to cover like a preview for the Phoenix Open.
Sweet.
And I'm kind of like, where's Griffey going to be? So I grab a baseball from our station and a Sharpie, of course. And I just kind of sort of stalk Ken Griffey Jr. around the golf course.
Just walking around the greens like, where is he?
And I get on, he's like, hole 15. I'm like, hey, man, can you just sign this for me? And I still got the baseball.
And he was cool about it.
Not that cool about it. I think he was a little like, what are you doing? But he did it anyways. And it's still in mint condition in a case at home. So.
And you grew up here, right?
Like I did,
You grew up watching the Mariners.
Well, oh, yeah.
Just like I did. Just like all that Soto mojo, that fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it like to get so close to Ken Griffey Jr.? This is a ridiculous conversation.
I know. Like,
no, but like I,
yeah,
he's the one celebrity that I think I would still, as it was even like as a 40-year-old man, I would lose my mind. If I saw Griffey, I'd just be like sweating and nervous.
I totally was.
I'd be 12 years old again.
Yeah. I was probably like 22, 23. So I was a Cub reporter.
Yeah.
He was my childhood hero. It was meeting my childhood hero and being like, hey, Mr. Griffey Jr., can you take this ball and sign it for me? And he's just like, yeah, man, here you go. And just it was very unceremonious and very anticlimactic.
You mean he didn't like meet eyes with you and just go like, thank you for being such a fan
all these
years, young man.
I think he was very annoyed.
He's just like, listen, I'm trying to tee off here.
Reporter.
Just another quick aside.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I didn't realize that Griffey was as famous around the rest of the world as he was here in Seattle. I thought he was like our guy here in Seattle. I didn't realize that like he was the face of Major League Baseball for those years when he was the kid and he was, you know, like Ken Griffey Jr. baseball.
I know.
On Super Nintendo.
Totally.
The fact that that was even a thing.
The Swingman logo. It's iconic.
I know. It's total iconic.
Yeah.
And how cool is it that we got to grow up and have that guy be our star?
Totally.
And then, you know, we lost him to another team, but whatever.
But came back. He came back.
Yeah, he came back, which is nice.
Wasn't a very pretty ending, but came back.
It wasn't pretty ending, but whatever. He came back. All right. Let's talk about the Mariners. We just have a couple minutes left.
Yeah.
The Mariners, last time we talked, the Mariners were not looking great. How are they looking now?
Much better.
Much better.
Much better. Don't quote me on this. I want to say they're 8-2 in their last 10, but they're playing very well the last few series. So let's just kind of recap the last few series. They swept the Cincinnati Reds at home. They went to Colorado, took 2 out of 3. Now they're in Texas right now. They won the first game. And the pitching, man, the pitching has just been lights out. The last 11 starts, our starting pitching has gone at least 5 innings, at least 5, and given up 2 runs or less.
Wow.
Just the starting pitching.
What is it with Mariners and pitching? Like, when did that start, and why is it? People must be studying the Mariners. Like, how could you guys have such a good pitching staff and not be winning every game?
So the rebuild started with the new management, Jerry DePoto, about 6-7 years ago. We're in a pitcher's ballpark here in Seattle. The marine layer hangs around for a lot of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, March, April, May, it's cold here. And the ball doesn't travel very far at T-Mobile Park. And one of these days when we play October baseball, it's going to be cold again. Pitching dominates. If you have good pitching, you can go a long ways in the postseason. Jerry DePoto, the general manager, is a former pitcher. So he has put...
That's his focus.
Yes.
Yeah.
A high premium on pitching. And all of the pitchers, minus Luis Castillo, who's our ace, they're homegrown. They have come up through the farm system. So we have guys like Logan Gilbert, who pitched last night, another gem. I mean, I'm talking like certainly all-star worthy at this point. potential like Cy Young worthy. The guy's given up no more than two runs in each start this.
It's pretty good.
This year, the last couple starts, either zero runs or one run.
Yeah.
So he's been lights out. George Kirby, fantastic. Only throws strikes for the most part.
Yeah.
Bryce Miller, who some people thought he might have been trade bait in the offseason, he's been amazing too. He's got an ERA under two. And then this other guy, just Emerson Hancock, who wasn't even supposed to come up this year. He's kind of a replacement for a guy who's hurt. He's been amazing too.
So he's gonna stick around.
Our worst pitcher so far is our ace, our number one starter, Luis Castillo, who got off to a rough start, but he's been turning it around as well. Pitching dominates. And finally, we're starting to see the offense click a little bit. Catcher Cal Raleigh, always looking good. And last night, we've been waiting for this moment all season. Julio Rodriguez finally hit his first bomb.
Here it is.
Swinging a high fly ball out to left field. Number one is sailing away. How far? Midway up the second deck. Julio's first in 2024 is loud.
So he's finally maybe starting to turn it on.
He has been turning it on. Even before that home run, he had multi-hit games in three or four straight games before then. So for the first few weeks of the season, he was batting below 200.
Yeah.
Now he's up to like 250, 260. So he's doing well. And a very fun moment last night with Julio. Have you seen the trident that they...
Yeah. Anytime they get up, yeah.
So Julio didn't want to let it go after that first home run last night. Gave it a big hug. Didn't want to let it go. So they
started off slow, but they're starting to gain some speed.
I would say so.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
They have leapfrogged the Texas Rangers for, as we speak, first place in the division.
Well, that's pretty good.
Pretty good. We'll
take that. First place is pretty good.
We'll take that.
Yeah.
We'll take that.
We'll take it for now.
Yeah.
All right. That's Aaron Granillo. He's knows everything about the Mariners, so it's fun anytime he can come in and join our show. Thank you, Aaron.
Happy to do it, Jake.
All right. We got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Kyber Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, I want to play some audio. This is pretty funny. It's something we can all laugh at and enjoy. You guys remember the other day when President Biden was talking about his uncle, who was named Ambrose or Ambrosia? It's not actually Ambrosia. His name was Uncle Ambrose. But he said that his Uncle Ambrose was shot down during World War II. He was on some sort of a transport plane. He was shot down near Papua New Guinea. And Joe Biden implied that his uncle had been eaten by cannibals. Now, this got a lot of attention, obviously, when the President of the United States talks about his uncle being eaten by cannibals, as you might imagine. And a lot of people were discussing it. Even The Daily Show decided that they would have some fun with this clip, and this is what that sounded like.
With Donald Trump trapped in the courthouse, it was a perfect opportunity for Joe Biden to seize the initiative. And hey, man, you got the campaign all to yourself, Mr. President. Time to press your advantage.
The Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea has angrily denied a false claim by President Biden that his uncle was eaten by cannibals during World War II.
He flew those single-engine planes as reconnaissance over war zones. He got shot down in New Guinea, and they never found the body because there used to be a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea.
You're going to lose the election.
Yeah. Look, at some point we all get to an age where we confuse our own life story with the plot of Indiana Jones. It happens.
No, it's true. Yeah. I mean, the man's 80, okay? We all have grandparents who tell crazy stories. Like, my grandfather told me that he once wrestled a mountain lion with his bare hands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and my grandfather told me that he cheated on my grandmother through their entire marriage and had a second family. Get out of here, Grandpa, you goofball!
It's kind of funny. The Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea was not happy with this. He released a statement saying that his country does not deserve to be labeled as cannibals. He actually also said that his nation was dragged into the conflict of World War II, and he urged President Biden at this time, when he's talking about Papua New Guinea being cannibals, to look into cleaning up these remains of World War II so the truth about missing servicemen like Ambrose Finnegan, that's Biden's uncle, can be put to
rest. I think that's an interesting thing. And, you know, if the president's going to bring these things up and suggest that his uncle was eaten on one of these islands, then yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a bad idea for them to go over there and maybe check some of this stuff out. All right. This is interesting, though, because the White House, shortly after Biden claimed that his uncle was eaten by cannibals, they said it's not something we should joke about. Now, you know, apparently the entire world disagrees and thinks that it's exactly the kind of thing that a president might say that should be joked about. But Karine Jean-Pierre, who was asked about this at the White House press secretary press briefing, said, no, it's not funny, and chastised Peter Ducey on Fox News for asking the question and for making fun of it.
Second Lieutenant Ambrose J. Finnegan was a war hero, but the Pentagon says, for unknown reasons, the plane was forced to ditch in the ocean. Both engines failed at low altitude. Why is President Biden saying he was shot down? There's no evidence of that. And why is he saying that his uncle was eaten by cannibals? That's a bad way to go.
He lost his life. It's not, look, I'm not, we should not make jokes about
it's
this.
Not, wait, wait, President wait. President Biden said that his uncle was eaten by cannibals.
I mean, your last line, it's for a laugh. It's for a funny statement. And he takes this very seriously. His uncle, who served and protected this country, lost his life serving. And that should matter.
So they say we shouldn't be joking about it. Daily Show had some pretty good jokes about it, though. It's kind of funny. I doubt that his uncle was eaten by cannibals. Even, you know, military records even say that there's no evidence that he was eaten by cannibals. They don't even mention it. They say he likely perished when the aircraft that he was on crashed for unknown reasons into the water. They were apparently having some sort of an engine trouble. They crashed into the water. The rest of the service members, the ones that they were that were found in the water, it was evident that they had died due to impact. And so, you know, due to the crash. And so they were saying that likely his uncle, Ambrose Finnegan, also died due to the impact. And they just never found him because, again, it was in water. Let's check in with Biden really fast. Yesterday, he was on the campaign trail. He's speaking in front of a group. He's reading the teleprompter. And maybe he's sticking a little bit too close to the teleprompter.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years.
Four more years.
Did you catch that? 4 more years. Pause. He's reading it.
4 more years. Pause.
And then people jumped up and I tried to save it and said, 4 more years. It's kind of funny. I think we can laugh about that too. All right. It did remind me, that clip reminded me of course, that infamous funny clip from Ron Burgundy.
Well, that's going to do it for all of us here at Channel 4 News. You stay classy, San Diego. I'm Ron Burgundy?
Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, Burgundy will read.
Burgundy will read, and so will Joe Biden, President Joe Biden. All right, we got a lot coming up next hour. It's the third hour of the show. A lot of people say it's the best of the 3 hours because we can really let our hair down and just have some fun. So stick around for that. We got a lot coming up. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.